Nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
Welcome back. You're listening to the Nerdcore Podcast, a podcast that reviews movies and talks that nerd shit. This is episode 197, and it is your news of the week. And we do not resell tickets for Avengers Endgame, but if you did buy it on eBay, well, I'm going to need you to sit down for this one, Chief. But as always, Bradley is here to co-host the show alongside me, the Nerd Chicano, as the host. Brad, did you know that people are actually buying tickets on eBay for Endgame?
My suggestion is save your money.
They're reselling it for like
$300. I mean, congrats to all the scalpers out there who can freaking afford to do that. But do people really need to see it? Like,
no,
like
if you
right away, like you can't just wait like a little bit and get in and pay the 10, 11 bucks, no problem.
If you fell for that, like you really do deserve the scamming. Because
I get not wanting to be spoiled, but at the same time, it's like, is it worth it? I mean, I knew about like Game of Thrones. I knew about the Red Wedding, about Hodor. I knew all about that. Still didn't ruin it for me.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, you can do what I do all the time. The week of the movie coming out, being released, I just delete all my social media.
Yeah, or just apps. Log into it.
I just delete my apps. Like, I probably leave, like, one app, but I just use that to, like, contact people that I need to talk to.
Yeah, but, I remember you did it with Infinity War.
I did it with Star Wars The Last Jedi. I did it with The Force Awakens. I for sure did it with The Force Awakens. And guess what? I never got spoiled. And I'm going opening night, so after I watch on Friday, I'm going to just re-download the app. But, guys, please, do not fall for these scams. These are, like, if you do fall for it, like, you deserve it 100%. You're that stupid to pay $300 to get a ticket for Endgame. Like, it's just really stupid.
Just wait it out.
Yeah.
You know? Just go the next day or the day after.
Yeah.
You don't need to be there, like, right on the dot whenever the fucking movie drops. That's unnecessary.
Yeah. Or you could have just done what I did. Just have my cousin in line as well on Fandango. And so if either of us could get in there, purchase a ticket, I pay her back, and then that's it, you know? You know, that's kind of, just keep your laptop open or something.
I mean, nobody should be paying more than whatever it costs to get in.
Yeah, it already costs a lot.
I think that's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but on the contrary, that was not the breaking news. That was just something I wanted to bring up because it's hilarious that people are falling for that shit, and it's like, you know, like, you really do deserve the scam if you're paying, like, $300 for the ticket. Like, that's just completely ridiculous.
Well, I don't think it's, like, falling for it. I think it's people just wanting to be, like, first to get on or in, and there's no need.
Yeah. How are you doing, Bradley?
Doing well. I am currently almost done with the second season of Sabrina Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. My bad. Yeah. Sabrina. And I saw Alita this weekend.
Would you like to offer your non-spoiler thoughts?
Alita, I thought was a terrific movie. Great visuals. Starts off a bit slow. 0 to 100 real quick, though.
Yeah. Is this the first live-action adaptation of anime that you really enjoyed?
Trying to think. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think they get a lot of it right with this one. Even with the big anime eyes everybody was so worried about, you don't even really notice it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think even most guys will say it probably makes the character cuter.
Yeah. So, and then Robert Rodriguez directed that, of course. We're going to be watching something else directed by Robert Rodriguez this week. We're going to be doing a 90s film month. We are continuing on with From Dusk Till Dawn. Great movie. But I'm glad to know that you watched that. I watched Shazam, getting ready for that review this, I believe we are going to be recording on Tuesday. So
is it Tuesday?
I think Tuesday.
I thought Tuesday was. Oh, because Monday is From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn. Tuesday.
Tuesday's not Game of Thrones.
No, Thursday is Game of Thrones.
Thursday is Game of Thrones.
Because I already told all the guests that it's Tuesday. I'm like, yeah. I'm sorry.
Wait, Thursday. When is Game of Thrones dropping Sunday though, right?
Yeah, but that episode literally comes out on Sunday, on Saturday, okay. On the day before the premiere. So I wanted to put the preview episode on that day. But okay. Yeah, so we're recording Shazam on Tuesday. So if you can't make it to the theater, I guess you're gonna have to use your other means.
My other sources.
Yeah, sadly, because you really should go and support this movie because it's really good, and knowing you. If you really like it, you're probably gonna end up buying it on Blu-ray. So
more than likely, or buying it online on Amazon as a keeper.
Yeah, which there has been certain movies that when I come out of the theater, I'm like, oh, I gotta get that on Blu-ray. There's some movies that I do that with. This was one of them. I was like, oh yeah, when this comes out on Blu-ray, I need it.
You know, there's gonna be some great bloopers throughout the whole damn thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. So, yeah, we're going to be doing that this week, and I saw Shazam. I'm currently pushing through season one of Titans, and I fucking love this show. So, I definitely want to review that. So, once I'm done, or you can probably start on it too, but I already gave you the login.
I'm two episodes away from finishing Sabrina, so after that, I'll probably start on Titans.
Yeah.
After watching From Dusk Till Dawn, of course. And Shazam.
Loving this, man. I know a lot of people doubted this show, but... I'll put it out there, man. I take back any bad thing I ever said about Titans before I saw that first trailer. I love this show, man. And it's really, really good. And I can't wait to talk about it.
I thought it was going to be good just from the outset of Robin's going, fuck Batman.
Yeah.
Or Nightwing or whoever.
Yeah. And it makes me really think about how much of a budget difference there is between these shows and the CW shows. Because the camera work is amazing in this show, dude.
Well, and you got to think back to Smallville era. They didn't have that kind of technology.
Yeah.
Really. They didn't have as great as CGI you can do for cheap. Hell, Ninja's doing great CGI and fuck, he just streams.
Yeah. But I was saying that CW in regards to The Flash and Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and all that stuff. Like Smallville, I understand because that was early on and, technology. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But... That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm glad that we're getting to do some stuff this week. But also, this is coming out on Monday. And if you guys are watching WrestleMania, hope you guys enjoyed that. Congratulations to Kofi Kingston, man.
11 years in the making.
Yep. New WWE champion and the first ever black Grand Slam champion. That's amazing, man. Amazing.
Can you explain that to me? What's the Grand Slam belt?
He's won the U.S. belt, the U.S. title. The Intercontinental title, the tag team title, and the main title. So he's basically won all the main titles that there is to be won.
Okay, and then I have a question. What's the difference between the World Championship and the Universal Championship?
Okay, Universal is that was just a split that they made. The World Championship, that's supposed to be the one that gets defended all over the world and stuff, but the Universal is just the championship for the brand, for that respected brand. So Raw has the Universal title, SmackDown has the WWE title. But it used to be so back in your time, and I know that we're really delaying the episode doing this, but I'll do a quick little explanation. Back in your time, it was the WCW title, and then it became the World Heavyweight title. So that was that one still count for Triple Crown and stuff like that. And it became the World Heavyweight title because of course they weren't going to have the WCW title on WWE. So they had to have a title for the other brand that would be coming in, which would be SmackDown. So that's what they changed the name for. So because they unified the WWE title and the World Heavyweight title, and they created the WWE World Heavyweight title. They didn't have the World Heavyweight title for Raw. So then they created the Universal title, and then they just completely negated the World Heavyweight title and said, okay, this is the WWE title, and this is the Universal title. Yeah.
We need a flow chart.
It's confusing, I know. It's confusing, but just know that it's the main title for the shows, the brands.
Okay, so the OG title... is what Kofi Kingston won, basically.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one that has the most legacy with it. I believe the Universal title has only had 6 people hold it already.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Kofi won the one with the most, the one that was the WWF title, the WWF title, that's the one with the most legacy with it.
Okay.
Which Booker T was he held the WCW title and the World Heavyweight title. He never held the WWE title. Brock is half black, and he won the WWF title. So he's held that title before. So, you know, Kofi is the second black champion, but he is the first Grand Slam black champion. And I believe Triple Crown, he's not Triple Crown yet because he hasn't won the Universal title. That's something different. I believe that's when you win, like, three major titles. Like, what's it called? It would be the tag team titles, which he's won already, the main title, and then the Universal title would be for Triple Crown. But Grand Slam is bigger, and I believe the first ever Grand Slam and Triple Crown champion was Shawn Michaels. So there's a lot of legacy to that respective title.
Huh. And I have another question.
Yeah.
So how many Patreon subscribers do we need in order to create our wrestling show?
Why you gotta ask this when I don't have it pulled up, dude?
Because I gotta segue it.
I believe 35. 35, yes. Yes, 35. 35. And I want to say that this podcast is brought to you by Patreon producer Grayson Barker. You can follow him on Twitter at Grayson Bark at Warlord Hitman 98 and Instagram at Grayson Barker 98. If you want to become a Patreon producer of this show and all the other podcasts, all you got to do is go to www.patreon.com/nerdcore and pledge $15 a month. All right. So, is that the segue you wanted?
That was the segue I wanted. Did you like it?
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on from that, it's time to hit the breaking news of this week. Big, big stuff, man. In the DC realm, we got some Suicide Squad news. This is big, man. Really big. So, I know a month ago, I think, we reported that Idris Elba was going to be playing Deadshot, which was, you know, it was true. But now we have an exclusive from Variety that says the Suicide Squad Deadshot removed from sequel as Idris Elba moves to new character. So guys, do not be scared. Idris Elba isn't leaving. He's just moving on to a different character, which I honestly love that this is happening, but I'm going to go ahead and read this before I actually give my thoughts. So let me go ahead and scroll down here. Though the next installment of the Suicide Squad franchise is moving, hold up, just going to move this a little bit. Okay, cool. Is moving full steam ahead with the addition of Idris Elba to the team. The movie will now move forward without one of its main characters. Though it was previously reported that Elba would be replacing Will Smith as Deadshot in the new pick, sources now tell Variety that all parties, including director James Gunn, have decided to move on from the Deadshot character, with Elba playing a new character in the Suicide Squad. Warner Brothers had no comment on the decision. It is unknown what character Elba would be playing, but after taking last few weeks to discuss, everyone involved felt this was the right move. The team also did not want to feel as if it was disrespecting Smith, who helped bring the character to life for the first time by replacing him with Elba. While many believe chances are still slim for a future return, the decision keeps the door open for Smith to possibly come back in future films, since his original reason for leaving had to do with scheduling and not creative differences. Oh, God. Please tell me that this doesn't have the volume on. No, it doesn't. Thank God, man.
Oh, man.
We almost just... Oh, man. Variety first reported in February that Smith would not be appearing in the next film with Warner Bros. And Gunn moved instantly to add Elba to the team, and the director and actor sat down days after Smith's departure. The meeting went so well that Elba agreed on the spot to join the next installment, but even at that time, it was not set in stone whether he'd be playing Deadshot or a brand new member in the team. With this decision, it looks like only three characters are expected to return are Harley Quinn with Margot Robbie, Jai Courtney's Captain Boomerang, and Viola Davis's Amanda Waller. Gunn is in the process of casting the remaining team members, with production expected to start in the fall. The film is now scheduled to bow on August 6, 2021. All right. I also had another thing that I forgot. I don't know where the source was, but I'm guessing the Variety didn't put it on there. I'm pretty sure it's not a valuable source, but I did hear a little rumbling that Joe Kinnaman would be coming back for Rick Flag, but since I'm not seeing it on here, I'm guessing that the source was not the most, what's it called? The most valuable.
Yeah, reliable.
Yeah, reliable, yeah. That's the word I was trying to look at. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to dissect from this article. Really, look, I just want to point out something. This is a really good move because this means we have the possibility of seeing Will Smith and Idris Elba in a movie down the line together.
Yeah, future episodes. And I think we can all agree from Suicide Squad that the cast was not the issue. No. At least a lot of the main cast, not the issue. Yeah. And I think James Gunn has come to that conclusion as well.
Yeah. And I love that they're bringing back Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah, she's a strong Waller, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was the one that I was really, really afraid of, that she wasn't going to come back, because I said, you have a really strong Waller here. She really stole that movie from me, and I think that if you don't have her, it's going to really hurt your film, especially with the fans, because they really love Viola Davis in that role.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad to see some confirmation that she's coming back for that. And also, if I could choose one character for Idris Elba to play, and I know this is going against what I said when I first watched Justice League, but since we're pretty much retconning a lot of things that have been happening in this, in the original, like, was it three or four movies? Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad, Justice League. Okay, four movies. Since we're basically kind of putting aside the events that happened in the first four movies, I would be very, very open to seeing a black Deathstroke. And Idris Elba played Deathstroke. I know.
I mean, he has the body type.
Oh, sure. 100%. And he has the chops to play him. I know. I loved Manganiello. The whole image of Manganiello playing Deathstroke. And if we can keep Manganiello, please. But if that is not moving anywhere and Manganiello is willing to pass the torch over, please, I would love to see Idris Elba take a crack at Slade Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm really, really excited to see what character he plays. But, I mean, whatever you give Idris Elba, he'll knock out of the park, honestly. I mean, even what fucking Hobbs and Shaw, whatever that shit is, that character looks interesting.
At least we know he'll be good.
Yeah, at least we know he'll be good. So I'm really, really interested to see where this goes. And I think that this is going really well right now, the casting. And I can't wait to see what other characters they're going to bring into the fold. But Brad, your thoughts on Idris Elba kind of moving on to a different character? I know you kind of went into it a little bit more, but if you don't have, we went into it already, but if you have a little bit more to say, you can kind of put it out there.
I think it's great. Like I said, the cast in Suicide Squad was not the issue with that mm-hmm. movie at all. It's always but all I hope is they don't just do a CGI Idris Elba as the voice of King Shark.
Oh, please no. Don't waste them like that.
No.
I don't think Gunn would do that.
No, I think he's more. I think I'm more leaning with your suggestion of a Deathstroke.
Yeah. Also, like, you know, if Gunn was able to convince him to come on, I'm pretty sure he's not going to be like, "Hey, man, I'm going to use you just for the voice of King Shark." Like, I'm pretty sure this is if Elba really wants to work with Gunn, Gunn is going to give him a character that fits Elba.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
unless they do a reimagining of King Shark where he's not like a giant shark.
No. And like, you know, it sucks that we're not going to get Idris Elba as Jon Stewart, because he would be a really, really good Jon Stewart. But mm-hmm. I mean, I could picture him as Deathstroke, and I think that would be freaking awesome, dude. So awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, it would because Batman comes in before that. I was going to say it would technically be the first recasting for the DCEU, but the Batman comes out before Suicide Squad. But, I mean, onto the box office report, that was the breaking news. I really wanted to talk about that. I know it broke last week, but it was just something that we had to talk about. And, yeah, I mean, we'll keep you guys covered with that. But for now, we're going to go ahead and move on to the box office report to see how well this weekend did. And, Brad, the bottom five, dude. I don't know what the best of enemies is. My first thing, I'm going to How to Train Your Dragon: The Hidden World, $1,985,000. I'm glad to see it's still kicking at the bottom five at number 10.
I'm still surprised to see Wonder Park on here. I know it's another animated child movie, but it's just surprising that one's still here because, you know, it's not as well known as How to Train Your Dragon. This is the third How to Train Your Dragon.
I would really like, hold up. I want to see who's the cast on this?
The best enemies?
No. Wonder Park.
Ah.
Because, I mean, that name doesn't even ring a bell as to who made it or anything. Like, oh, it's a Nickelodeon movie produced, Paramount Animation. I mean, it's not even Illumination. Like, you know, it's not one of the big animated studios. Jennifer Gardner, Mila Kunis, Kevin... I hate when the names get cut off here. Kevin Chamberlain? I don't know who the hell that is. Ken Jeong. And, oh, Kenan Thompson.
Yeah, so a lot of big names on it.
John Oliver?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we're just not paying much attention to trailers these days, Brad.
Yeah, some. I mean, we didn't even know the best of enemies. I don't even know what that's on.
I don't even
on.
Know what the hell that is, man. Wonder Park tells the story of a magnificent amusement park where the imagination of a wildly creative girl named June comes alive. All right. Well, and it had a budget of $100 million, so it's making that back.
Oh, I did see this trailer. This actually looked really good.
Oh, well, there we go. We just don't have the great memory.
It's got Tobey Maguire, Robin Bissell. If you go watch the trailer, it's actually a really good trailer.
Yeah. I guess we're just not going to airports often. Excuse me.
It's about a Ku Klux Klan leader becoming, leaving the Klan and becoming friends.
Brad, that's not Wonder Park. Oh, the best of enemies.
Best enemy.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, shit. I was like, bro, that is not Wonder Park.
No, that's not Wonder Park. My God. That is a horrible animated movie there,
Oh, shit. Yeah, I was like, bro, that is not Wonder Park, bro.
Yeah, Best of the Enemies has Taraji P. Henson in it.
Yeah. Oh, I remember. Okay. Yes. I saw this trailer too.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That looks really, really good.
Civil rights activist Ann Atwater faces off against CPLS exalted Cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan.
Well, I'm glad to see it made a pretty good debut. I'm pretty sure the budget for that is pretty low too. So we're gonna go ahead and move on to the top five, and I believe last week was when you did the news, right?
Did I?
I believe you did, because we did Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles last week.
Oh, yes, I did do the news.
Yeah, okay. So, Captain Marvel is at number 5 with a $12,682,000. Brad did not point that out last week, and I know I think I said that on Tuesday, but Captain Marvel is part of the $1 billion club. So, I'm guessing that boycott didn't do too well, did it, boys? Yeah.
Nope. Nope.
Yep. Yeah, so $1 billion club. And then next we have a number 4, Us, for the second week straight with $13,813,000 at number... Oh, no, third week. I'm sorry. Third week for Us. At number 3 is Dumbo for the second week at 18...
Ooh, it dropped hard.
Yeah, it dropped hard. $18,224,000. And number 2 making its debut this weekend is the new Stephen King adaptation, $25 million is Pet Sematary. And at number 1, the newest installment into the DC Extended Universe, or Worlds of DC, we haven't even gotten a confirmation of which one it is, and making $53,450,000 is Shazam at number 1. Oh, at least you know who got the prediction point for that one. So, I'm going to hand that out to Brad. Yeah.
Woo!
Yeah, I was way off. But look, I do want to point a couple of things out. This is the lowest opening weekend for a DC film. But this is also one of the least expensive DCEU movies. So this is not a bad opening at all.
I do question, though, because I was getting a lot of reports that people should be warned that it did have scary moments that you shouldn't bring your kids to. Like, I kept seeing that all over Twitter. Like, people were kind of outraged that there were scary moments, and they brought their kids to it, and they were all scared. And I wonder if that hurt it. I think children
are being coddled a lot, okay? First of all, I think kids are being coddled a lot. There's a good thing to films to scaring you, you know? Fear's not a bad thing.
I don't disagree. I'm just wondering if that had something to do.
I was in a theater with kids. When that part came up, they laughed their ass off. So... I don't know kids these days, man. But I will say that some of the best things about filmmaking is the various emotions that it can make you feel. One of them is fear. So, and plus, this is a director with horror chops. So there was, like, James Wan, he was going to include some form of horror in there. A little, you know, nod to what his forte is. But it's not that bad of a thing. It doesn't even show anything that bad. It is kind of a little bit, like, odd. Because the film itself is a very light movie, but I can say that it's nothing too crazy that your kids should cover their eyes at. Like, I've seen worse. I mean, a kid was present with me when I was watching Deadpool, and I think that's a lot worse. But, I'm just saying, I think kids are coddled too much with what they're being shown in film. So, like, whatever. So, that being said, this is an amazing opening for Shazam. It was tracking at $48 million. Obviously made more than we expected. I'm very happy to see this because the film deserves it 100%. And I believe it made $102 million overseas. So it's on its way to make back its profit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm surprised with Pet Sematary, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw this coming. But I know I said that this is a big competition.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't expect for it to make $25 million.
No, that's what I mean. I didn't expect that either because it's not the second part of It. So I wasn't expecting, like, a lot of money. But $25 million for a Stephen King adaptation to a book from 1983 or something?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty fucking good.
But like I said, it had a good amount of marketing. The trailers kind of showed a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But there was also word of mouth saying that this was a really, really freaking scary movie. So that's going to help your film get eyes on them. So obviously we see why $25 million was made from Pet Sematary. So that's really, really good for that case. I think that next week we only have one film, big film being opening next week. This weekend, I'm sorry, because this comes out on Monday. So this weekend we have, I saw the trailer for this one, Brad, for Little. And it looks like a really good movie. I think this is going to be a good opener as well. But we have five movies that are big ones coming out. We have Missing Link. It's an animated film, which I actually did see the trailer for this one. It looks kind of interesting. Little. That one has Taraji P. Henson in it. And we have Hellboy. And then we have something called After. I have no idea what After is. Young adult romance with Josephine Langford and Hiro Fiennes Tiffin. I don't think this is as big as 5 feet apart. So this one might just fall under the cracks. Yeah, I don't think After is going to be a big hit. Okay, but I'm looking at Missing Link, Little, and Hellboy over here. I think for sure Missing Link is... I think Missing Link hits top five.
What is Missing Link?
Missing Link is a pretty good trailer, not going to lie.
Because I never heard of it.
It's a stop motion animation film, by the way. Missing Link, the next fun movie from Portland-based stop animation studio Leica of Coraline, Paranorman, the Box Trolls, Kubo and the Two Strings. Previously, the story introduces us to Mr. Link, a furry creature. Oh, God. A big furry creature and the man who is out to prove his existence. The charismatic Sir Lionel Frost, who ends up befriending him, featuring the voices of Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, Zach Galifianakis, Timothy Oliphant, David Williams, Emma Thompson, Matt Lucas, Ching Valdez Aran, and Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry and Amrita Acharya. Those are actually a big cast. I mean, I'm looking at those first four, those first three names, dude. Hugh Jackman, Zoe Saldana, Zach Galifianakis. Sadly, I do not think that this makes like a big like fucking no.
I mean, this one, I'm surprised we haven't heard about this because I'm surprised the any religious community didn't come out and bring controversy to it.
Yeah, well, look.
You know how they like to do that.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the three trackings for these movies. So first of all, Missing Link has a tracking of 10 million. Little has a tracking of 15 million. And then Hellboy has a tracking of 22 million. Out of these three, the only two I can see can make a hit at the top five are Little and Hellboy. But this is the way I see it. I think number one, once again, we see Shazam drop to at least a 45 million. And number two, Hellboy. Hellboy.
Yeah.
At 21 million?
I want to go higher. I want to say it opens kind of like Pet Sematary with 25.
You're going to go over? I'm going to go under, man. I think 21. At least 20 or 21 million.
It is rated R. It's not like the other Hellboys. So you might be right on that.
Yeah. And number three, we'll have Pet Sematary at like around 19, 18 million.
I think it drops a little farther, but
yeah,
15, 16.
Four, at number four, we'll have Little. I think Little's going to open up to a good old... where is my link here? I'm sorry.
12 million.
12, 10 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. At five, I think Dumbo actually gets pushed here. I think Us takes number five.
Yeah, I agree. Like. I think Us is going to be higher than Dumbo next week.
9-ish, 8 million. Captain Marvel around like 6 at number 6. And then Dumbo will be on the bottom of that. No, actually Missing Link will probably be there. I think Missing Link is a little bit under. And then Dumbo after that. But I'm not going to give you the other ones. Those were the only ones I was going to give you because of the new ones that are coming out. But yeah, I don't think this is... We have one animated movie from a pretty big studio and a good cast. We have another one coming from with Taraji P. Henson, and then you have the second week of Shazam. I think Dumbo is out of here. Like, at least goes down to, like, number eight.
I don't know if it falls that far, but it's definitely going into the bottom 10.
Yeah. Do you agree with my take with the with the ranking? Just, you probably have different numbers in mind, but...
They're pretty close.
Yeah.
You know, I think you hit it pretty the way I'm thinking it's going to go.
Yeah, but we'll see. We'll see you next weekend for the box office report. But, I mean, for now, that's been the box office report. You can always check that stuff out on boxofficemojo.com. This is not an ad. We just really like that site. So, thank you, Box Office Mojo, for compiling your results in an organized way. So, on to the news, Bradley. This one. I'm so excited. The Eternals has me interested, Brad. But after this, it's like, oh yeah, I want to see this. And usually, you know, I'm not really a guy who laughs at a lot of things, but this guy knows how to make me laugh. All right. So from the Hollywood Reporter, from an article written by Boris Kitt, Kumail Nanjiani, I believe I read that, said that correctly, in talks to join Angelina Jolie in Marvel's The Eternals, and an exclusive from the Hollywood Reporter. The superhero adventure project is one of two Marvel features preparing to shoot this year. Kumail Nanjiani is the latest to go Marvel. The comedian and Oscar nominee is in negotiations to star alongside Angelina Jolie in The Eternals, one of two features that Marvel is prepping to shoot this year. Chloe Zhao is directing the superhero adventure project based on the 1976 comic book series created by Jack Kirby. The heroes got a dusting off in the 2000s by author Neil Gaiman. The project features the superpowered and near-immortal beings known as Eternals, and a more monstrous offshoot known as Deviants that were created by comic beings known as Celestials. Jolie is understood to be playing the character named Cersei, a more outgoing Eternal who has not been afraid to move amongst humankind. Nanjiani's character details were hidden in the sands of time. Nanjiani, who earned an Oscar nomination for co-writing The Big Sick, with wife Emily Gordon, is hitting a busy time period on the TV side. He stars in the first Twilight Zone episode from CBS All Access and executive producer Jordan Peele. On the movie side, he will be seen in Sony's Men in Black International, which is set to open June 14th, and then stars with Dave Bautista in the action comedy Stuber, which Disney Fox will open July 12th. And he's at WrestleMania today. Well, today we're recording on Sunday, and he has a shirt with Batista's face on it. It's just his face on it.
I sent you a link. Gary V is also up there front, taunting Batista.
He's like right in back of the commentary table.
Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, that's great.
That's I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love this guy in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
I even have a Funko Pop of him. That's weird. But, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of sad, though, because the more work it gets, the more likely it is he's going to leave Silicon Valley. But good for him.
Yeah. The only thing I've seen him in was, because I haven't watched The Twilight Zone yet, and I heard that the first episode is on YouTube for free. So I'm probably going to go check that out soon. What I have seen him in was The Big Sick, and I loved The Big Sick. I thought it was really, really good. Some of the best work from Amazon Studios. And it just reminded me, like, damn, like, you know, Netflix is out here doing big things, but Amazon should, it's something, some eyes should be put on Amazon because they have some really, really good stuff that they produced. Mm-hmm. The Big Sick is really good, and he was really good in that movie, too. And he's really, really funny, obviously, if you've never seen anything from his comedy side. I mean, you're missing out because the guy is hilarious. And I'm really excited to see what role he lands in this. And, I mean, this movie in general has my interest. And after this, it's just like, okay, yeah. Like, I know I'm going to laugh now because this guy's hilarious. Yeah,
there's definitely going to be some humor in it.
Yeah. And him, Angelina Jolie, and, I mean, we have to wait and see what other cast will be added to this. But, I mean, this is looking like a pretty good cast right now. Yeah. I mean, but moving on, we're going to go ahead and go on to the Black Widow side because this did come out last week, but we forgot, of course, you know, we didn't really break it because we were doing other stuff and it didn't break on Sunday when I was writing the episode for Brad and Ashley. But from Variety, in an exclusive, Black Widow, Rachel Weisz circling key role in Marvel's standalone film. And it doesn't say in the headline, but also there's another name to it, and his name is David Harbour. Fresh off her Oscar nomination for The Favourite, or The Favourite, because it has the OU in it, Rachel Weisz has her sights on the Marvel Cinematic Universe as she is in early talks to join Scarlett Johansson in Marvel's Black Widow standalone movie. Though a deal has not yet been completed, sources tell Variety that the talks are headed in that direction with strong interest from both sides of negotiations. Stranger Things star David Harbour is also in talks to join the film with Outlaw King's Florence Pugh. Oh, not, and she isn't just an Outlaw King. She was in Fighting With My Family. She plays Paige on Fighting With My Family. And Kate Shortland signed on to direct. Jack Schaefer is penning the script. The film has been in development for some time, but picked up momentum last year after Schaefer's hire. Kevin Feige is producing the pick, of course. Marvel had no comment on the talks, and Weisz's team could not be reached for comment. It's unclear whether Black Widow will be an origin tale or set after Avengers Endgame. It's currently also unknown who Weisz would be playing in the film. There's no big push for fans of Johansson's Black Widow to get in her own movie since she first appeared in 2010's Iron Man 2. With the latest phase of MCU coming to a close, the studio saw this as the best time to move forward on the project. All right. Two things to take over this. I hope David Harbour is playing the villain because I would really like to see him in the villain role. And two, I love that Rachel Weisz is going to be in this. Hopefully be in this because she's a really, really good actress. And if she's playing opposite Scarlett Johansson, then we are going to see some really, really good dynamics from both of them because those are two really talented actresses.
I mean, we're hearing good news. It sounded good.
I still don't understand.
See a trailer.
Yeah, I need to see the trailer. I know. I still don't understand the need for this one because, you know, we both agree it's late. But, you know, Rachel Weisz and David Harbour and Florence Pugh, I mean.
Maybe it's one of those better late than never.
Yeah, better late than never. Exactly. I think they might just be one of those, Brad.
Yeah.
But, look, that being said, I'm really, really interested to see where this goes, and I just really want to see a trailer. I think this is definitely the one. This is definitely going to start shooting soon, if I remember correctly. And I think this is the film that's going to hit in 2020 with the Eternals. I know I saw that rumor that it would be Doctor Strange 2, but I think that them delaying Guardians 3 really did mess up the schedule for 2020. So I think we're only going to get two films in 2020, and that will be Black Widow and the Eternals, possibly. Mm-hmm. But we went in more into depth with that in the mini pod. But if you want, like I said, if you want to get the mini pod, all you need to do is pledge $2 at a Patreon feed. So go ahead and do that. But moving on, my friend. Moving on. Brad. Look, Brad, I'm going to let you read this one because you actually can see the font on this. But yeah, I'll just say that this is from Production Weekly's Instagram account, which you can follow at Prod Week, at Prod Week on Instagram. Brad, take it away.
I'm guessing you want me to read the Akira, kind of what they're saying, right? Yeah. Okay. When a young man's telekinesis is discovered by the military, he is taken in to be turned into a super weapon, and his brother races to save him before Manhattan is destroyed by his powers. Kaneda is a bar owner in Neo Manhattan who is stunned when his brother Tetsuo is abducted by government agents led by the colonel. Desperate to get his brother back, Kaneda agrees to join with Kai Reed and her underground movement, who are intent on revealing to the world what truly happened to New York City 30 years ago when it was destroyed. Kaneda believes their theories to be ludicrous, but after finding his brother again, is shocked when he displays telekinetic powers. Kai believes Tetsuo is headed to release a young boy, Akira, who has taken control of Tetsuo's mind. Kaneda clashes with the colonel's troops on his way to stop Tetsuo from releasing Akira, but arrives too late. Akira soon emerges from his prison courtesy of Tetsuo as Kaneda races in to save his brother before Akira once again destroys Manhattan Island as he did 30 years ago. And this is total shit.
Yeah, this is nowhere.
This is nowhere near the story.
Yeah.
At least the anime story.
That is the synopsis. It's not the official synopsis for the movie, but it's the synopsis of the production. And I'm going to try to do my best to read the producers. We have Andrew Lazar, John Jacini, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jennifer Davison Killerin, and Kashiro Otorno. You should be very afraid that there's only one Asian man producing this film. Yeah. Status, active development, location, California. I'm not going to read the other information because that's a little bit too personal. But if you have Production Weekly, like, you just go read that shit.
I mean,
but look, and then
I don't know how much Otomo is actually in this. He did write and produce the manga.
Yeah.
But how much does he really have over this?
It's probably just a name.
Yeah, because right now it sounds nothing, at least the anime.
Yeah.
At least the anime, it sounds nothing that happened in the anime.
Yeah. Written by Marco Ramirez. And then directed by Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And Brad put out a tweet that really stood out to me. He said, not even Taika could make me want to see this.
No.
And reading this... that synopsis, my friend, they do not know what the fuck they're doing with this movie. That is not the fucking anime.
Here, let me, because people are going to be kind of confused, let me read the Akira manga wiki, at least part of it.
Yeah,
and
tell you what
the actual story is.
Go ahead.
Set in a post-apocalyptic and futuristic Neo-Tokyo, the manga focuses on the efforts of a teenage biker gang leader, Kaneda, political activist Kai, a trio of espers, and Neo-Tokyo's military leader, Colonel Shikishima, to prevent Tetsuo, Kaneda's mentally fractured childhood friend, from using his unstable telekinetic abilities to ravage the city and awaken a mysterious individual with similar psychic abilities named Akira. Through his work, Otomo uses conventions of the cyberpunk genre to detail a saga of political turmoil, social isolation, corruption, and power.
Key word being Tokyo.
Tokyo and also Kaneda and... Yeah, Kaneda and Tetsuo are not brothers.
Yeah. You got... Oh!
I mean, they've strayed so far already.
This is going to be a nice little case of the good old whitewashing.
Mm.
100%.
And this was always my fear because I've known this has been, because I followed this.
Yeah.
I followed this when they were thinking of making this live action. I saw when Leo picked it up in his studio and it kind of just sat there.
Yeah.
For a long time. For a while. Probably 10, 15 years.
Yeah. It was sitting for a while.
Yeah. And now it's coming to light and I still don't like it.
No. Oh, this is fucking ridiculous. What hurts for you to follow the fucking format of the original?
I mean, and even, you know, I'm sure the anime took some liberties.
Yeah, awesome. Of course. Because,
but not to the point, because you can only fit so much in a two-hour setting.
Of course, Alex always brings this up to me when we talk about this film. The manga wasn't finished when the movie came out, but even then, it's still a pretty fucking good movie.
Yeah, I mean, you could technically just go off the anime, and you could make a really good movie.
Yeah.
If you just went off that. But they're not even, I don't know where they're going with this.
Yeah, I don't understand what's so hard. What's so hard about having to follow the original? Like, you know, you think that you can change these very vital things and expect them to go over well with fans? That's not how it goes. I mean, you know what I read about the Your Name adaptation? It sounds kind of interesting. Yes, it does not. It kind of bothers me that it's not going to be kind of Asian centered. But the whole idea of having a Native American and an American side to it, it makes for an interesting kind of dynamic. But this just screams that it's going to be fucking whitewashed.
Well, and I really hope the production notes aren't what's happening, but usually...
Oh, it's from Production Weekly, my friend. I believe this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's kind of what's down there. Yeah. And, you know, after watching Alita and really liking Alita, and I know Robert Rodriguez and James Cameron probably tried to stick somewhat to the manga or manga.
Mm-hmm.
Just to go from that to this, I'm not even, you know, I love Akira. Mm-hmm. Akira is one of my favorite animes ever.
Yeah.
And I am not looking forward at all to this. I am not. I might not even watch the trailers.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about this.
Yeah. This is this is going to be really interesting to pull off. And
I'll see who they cast, because I think that might have a lot, because I was waiting for the Cowboy Bebop to drop and just be a bunch of white people.
Yeah. And then we got that, like, what's it called?
Then we got a really fucking good cast. With John Cho and a few others in there.
Yeah. All right. So, moving on from that to another stressful topic, as always, the good old Transformers universe. From slashfilm.com, and I believe the writer is Fred Topel. All right. They talked to a couple of producers, from various movies, including The Meg, but they also talked about Transformers. So I'm just going to read these two questions. And it's really interesting to see how they backtrack, because I believe 3 or 2 weeks ago, we had a report that said that they were going to be developing a sequel to The Last Knight. Well, it looks like they kind of backtracked. That doesn't seem to be the case because, well, I'll read these two questions here.
Oh,
so for the next Transformers, are you looking for new directors or hoping you can still make Michael Bay an offer? I think Bay has made it really clear that he loved what he did and he's not doing anymore. Thank fucking God. So I think the answer is we're writing a script. At that point, we have a strong belief in, then we'll begin to debate that. Michael's made it really clear. What? Michael's the store? Jesus. Michael made it really clear that he didn't want to do it. I don't blame him. He spent a hell of a decade of his life shooting them. And then the next question was, are you developing a script that picks up where The Last Knight left off? And literally a simple no was the answer.
Makes sense. Matt Wahlberg would not be bad.
Although something interesting to point out is that a Meg sequel is in the works with I have not read the script that's being worked on, but it is being worked on.
That fucking movie has a script?
Look.
Jason Statham punches a shark. What the fucking more do you need?
You know what? When we make shirts, we need to make one that says, that movie has a fucking script? I think that describes a lot of movies that we've reviewed on this fucking podcast for the last year and a half.
Venom, that movie has a fucking script?
Venom has really? A fucking script?
Yeah, we want to read it. Like, it's just a bunch of blank pages and one that says...
Redacted.
Venom calls him a pussy. Yeah, that's the only part of the script.
Okay. So, backtracking... this is really interesting. I'm glad that fucking Michael Bay is not working on this. And yeah, he spent a decade working on these films. Boo-hoo, whatever. You fucking ruined these movies. Look, they might have made a lot of money, but these were terrible movies. And yeah. I think the direction to go with is what obviously Bumblebee did with it, with what Travis Knight and Christina Hodson did with for that film. I think that's where you go next. And
I think the issue we met with Bumblebee, though, is that we were all expecting a sequel to The Last Knight. It'd just be horrible, and none of us went to go see it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're like, fuck that. I ain't going to see another goddamn Transformers, man.
Yeah, but...
fuck that shit.
Oh, yeah, but coming soon to you guys, that movie has a fucking script t-shirts, definitely, my friends. Because that was... oh my god. But look, keep an eye on this. I really don't care about the Transformers verse, but I know that this is something that would interest you all. But Michael Bay not being on the project definitely has interest in me, because I think Michael Bay didn't know what to do with Transformers.
Explosions. That's about it.
Well, the Bayhem is over. The Bayhem is over. Moving on to other stuff, though. We have some very disappointing news, but we saw this coming because Holmes and Watson did not do good. I really want to see this.
Don't say, Holmes.
So, from Deadline, Holly, from Deadline, from an article written by Mike Flanagan Jr., longtime partners Will Ferrell, Adam McKay, to go their separate ways. Okay, let me go ahead and zoom in for this. In an exclusive from Deadline, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay have mutually decided to branch out separately and refocus their creative efforts. This will wind down one of the biggest creative partnership relationships in town. The duo met when they were hired on the same day on Saturday Night Live in 1995. And 13 years ago, they formed with Chris Henchy the multi-platform comedy-generating production company Gary Sanchez, later branching into a female-centric offshoot, Gloria Sanchez. They also teamed up on a bunch of comedy classic hit movies, including Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, and The Other Guys. McKay directed these films, and Ferrell starred in them. I'm told they remain close friends, but it is expected that the Paramount-based production labels will wind down over time. They will continue to see through their existing projects to completion and develop them with attached producers. They will work together on the extensive slate of shared projects and will continue to support each other both personally and professionally. But they will explore new endeavors as well as their own individual projects, and it's expected that they will form new ventures into house those projects. They just made the decision to split, and the exact details are still being formulated. They've confronted their split to Deadline and issued the statement, "The last 13 years could not have been more enjoyable and satisfying for the two of us at Sanchez Productions. We give massive thanks to our incredible staff and the executives and all the writers, directors, and actors we worked with through the years. The two of us will always work together creatively and always be friends. And we recognize we are lucky as hell to end this venture as such." They developed their... okay, I'm not going to read through that. I will say, look, 100% Holmes and Watson has to do with something of this, because that was just terribly performing. But I also think that going by the last two films that McKay has directed, that being Vice and The Big Short, I think that McKay is just moving on to a different form of films, and I think he wants to venture his serious films.
Yeah, going away from comedy. I mean, doing 13 years, that's huge in the entertainment world, is doing something for 13 years. And they didn't do it poorly. I mean, Holmes and Watson was a failure, but look, Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys.
Yeah.
Like, those are major hits. So, it's not like they failed. So I can definitely see where they want to go their separate ways, because Will Ferrell, he's the face of comedy, let's face it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to pull a Robin Williams and go into more dramatic roles. I just don't see that from him.
Yeah.
But McKay going forward and producing stuff like The Big Short and kind of more dramatic or towards that aspect instead of comedies, I could see that.
Yeah. And I just think that he's moving on to like more serious films. And I'm reading this off Wikipedia, so please do not quote me on this, but it says here that McKay will work with Jennifer Lawrence for a biographical film titled Bad Blood, which tells the story of entrepreneur Elizabeth Holmes based on the book Bad Blood, Secrets
of Life.
Actually,
I think that's already out.
Really?
I think that's already out on Netflix.
Oh, crap. It is in development and will be produced by Legendary Pictures and released by Universal Pictures. Vanessa Taylor is writing the script. McKay has also expressed interest in making a film about the Coach brothers and global warming. I think he is definitely moving on to more serious films. So we saw this coming. It's just a sad thing to see it go, because these two were just great partners in comedy. You know, some of the only movies that made me laugh. But that being said, I think that they chose the right time to move on. I mean, 13 years, that's a long time. Brett?
Sorry, I was looking. Yeah. It's actually, is it Out for Blood? The inventor
no,
Out for Blood?
No, it's Bad Blood. I think this is...
Oh, it's actually on HBO. So, The Inventor Out for Blood. Let's see here.
I don't want the lyrics to the Taylor Swift song. I want the movie.
This is, Rise and Fall of Theranos, the one-time Billy. This is actually is an HBO documentary.
Oh, okay. Well, well, that being said, either way, I'm just bringing up the fact that, you know, it's something that he's moving on to more serious genre. So,
which, you know, is great, I think. I mean, what more can you expect after 13 years and getting some of the best comedies that have come out in recent memory?
And he has the right to do it. You know, as a filmmaker, he can jump between genres that he wants, man, that he wants.
And so. I think that's where you really make a name, is you're not just stuck in one mode, and people can't just say, oh, you're a comedy director.
Yeah, I mean, look at Kubrick. Yeah. He jumped around so many genres.
Yeah, in such short a time, really.
Yeah. I am going to go ahead and move on to the next one. I do not have the exact quote, but I can paraphrase it, because I'm not going to turn on the volume for this, because I do not want to get copyrighted or blast your eardrums with the audio from this Twitter. But at MTV News, they talked with Ryan Johnson, and it says here, look, at Ryan Johnson is just as excited for J.J. Abrams' Star Wars Episode 9 as we are, and he tells us at CinemaCon he hopes that the director keeps taking the universe to new heights. I want him to do for stuff that I wasn't expecting him to do. So I think they asked him about like the whole thing about retconning it. I think that he said he doesn't mind. Like, you know, his expectations were his expectations. And, you know, he just wants J.J. Abrams to make his own movie. So, look, Brad and I notoriously love unapologetically love The Last Jedi a whole lot. If it gets retconned, whatever. I just want to see how this trilogy ends and it gets, like, how it wraps up. I don't think J.J. Abrams is going to retcon it, because deep down, I think that J.J. Abrams doesn't dislike the movie. I know that he had something planned for how he wanted the series to go, but deep down, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think he's going to retcon it. I think he's going to conclude the saga in a very interesting way. But I don't think that he's going to, you know, like, retcon some of the stuff that was put in the film for Johnson's film.
No, I don't think so.
It would just make too much of a mess.
Yeah, I think it would just cause confusion in the fans.
Yeah.
I mean, you already have fans who are angry, so they're going to be angry anyway.
Yeah.
But why cause confusion to everyone else?
Yeah. And it would just cause confusion, and, you know, it would just another shitstorm, which, by the way, I mean, shitstorms are always possible with the fan base that is the Star Wars fandom. So, So, I mean, you really can't satisfy them at all.
You can't make everyone happy.
Yeah. I think that just Abrams is going to do what he needs to do, and I'm really interested to see what that is, but I'm just glad to see that that Johnson is just, you know, taking this well, and he's always taking it well. He even responds to trolls sometimes, so, you know. One thing that I do want to point out, apparently, what he did say, he was at CinemaCon, he gave a little bit of footage for Knives Out, his next film that's coming out. He did say that after Knives Out, he would be returning to a galaxy far, far away. So that is definitely telling us that his trilogy is definitely being worked on, and I'm really excited to see that. I mean,
do you have any idea what his trilogy is going to follow?
I don't know, because we have the David Benioff and D.B. Wise trilogy, and then we have Johnson's trilogy. Everybody thought that Johnson's trilogy was going to be Knights of the Old Republic, and then it switched over, and they were like, oh no, these Game of Thrones guys, these guys are going to do Knights of the Old Republic for sure. I don't think we get any confirmation about whatever they're doing at Star Wars Celebration this week. I think we get confirmation that D.B. Wise and David Benioff's trilogy is the next one to come out. But I think it would be in the best effort for Johnson just to make his new story. You don't have to adapt anything. I think you get a slate of new characters and just go off that.
Honestly, you know what I want?
What?
I want a fucking Knights of Ren movie, damn it.
Honestly?
They have been teased for the last fucking two movies. Give me a fucking Knights of Ren.
Yeah. Well, we can go ahead and talk about that off air. But yeah, we'll go ahead and talk about that off air. But I would be interested in the Knights of Ren movie, but I think it's in his best... it's honestly in his advantage for him to just go with new characters, because people are constantly crying about how he ruined the characters that he already exists.
That would be easy to do with the Knights of Ren, because I haven't fucking seen them.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know anything about the Knights of Ren, except that there's a Knights of Ren. So,
yes.
Yeah. Either way, that being said, let's go ahead and move on. This next news is coming from Deadline Hollywood, again from Mike Flanning Jr. Dave Bautista to star in Zack Snyder-directed Army of the Dead. In an exclusive from Deadline, as Dave Bautista prepares to battle Triple H at this Sunday in WrestleMania 35.
Also, if you've been paying attention to Twitter, there is now a GIF or whatever you want to call it, of Triple H pulling out Dave Bautista's nose ring with pliers. It's great.
He just closed a Netflix deal to star in Army of the Dead, the $70 million budget zombie heist film that Zack Snyder will direct. Scripted by Shay Hatton and Snyder, the adventure is set amid a zombie outbreak in Las Vegas, during which a man assembles the group of mercenaries to take the ultimate gamble, venturing into the quarantine zone to pull off the greatest heist ever attempted. Zack Snyder and Deborah Snyder are producing, and Ori Marmur and Andrew Norman are overseeing it for Netflix. All right. Yeah, well, I mean, this is just great that Bautista's getting work. I think this is going to be really good for Snyder as well. He's kind of going back to his roots of the whole zombie movies. And it's going to be really interesting. Look, Bautista's getting a lot of work, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has that spy movie coming out. Now, and
well,
then he has...
I mean, and we have to go back to some of my comments before. I think he's the best wrestling turn actor.
Oh yeah, I mean, of course you have The Rock, but I mean, other than The Rock,
well,
I mean,
I still think. Well, I don't know. He hasn't pulled in as much money as The Rock yet.
Yeah,
but I mean, he's done Blade Runner 2049.
He's in bigger roles.
He's
than
done
the
a
Rock.
James Bond film. My God,
he's going to be in fucking Dune.
Yeah, so I mean, his acting chops are up there. He's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, what can this man not do? In The Rock, you get Fast and the Furious, or you get The Rock playing The Rock.
Yeah. And I mean, he's really getting a diverse amount of movie works, and it's really interesting to see what he can do, and it's going to be really interesting. Maybe even Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, James Gunn is there, but... it's nice to see that he's now going to be working at the Netflix realm. And another person that will be working at the Netflix realm is Ron Howard and Amy Adams. because Amy Adams is going to star in Ron Howard's Hillbilly Elegy at Netflix for an exclusive from Variety written by Justin Kroll. Amy Adams is set to star in Netflix's adaptation of Hillbilly Elegy, which Ron Howard is on board to direct, Variety has learned. Shape of Water screenwriter Vanessa Taylor adopted the script with Howard, Brian Grazer, and Karen Lunder. Producing for Image Entertainment, Julie O and J.D. Vance will executively produce. Based on Vance's best-selling memoir, The Pick is a modern exploration of the American dream and follows three generations of an Appalachian family as told by its youngest member, a Yale law student forced to return to his hometown. Imagine has been developing the movie since 2017 when it acquired the rights. Netflix boarded the project in January after winning a heated bidding war to finance the $45 million feature. Adams had a busy 2018, starting with her role in HBO limited series Sharp Objects, which earned her a Golden Globe nomination. She followed that up with her Oscar-nominated performance as Lynn Cheney in the Dick Cheney biopic Vice. She can be seen in the adaptation of the New York Times best-selling bestseller Woman in the Window, which co-stars Julianne Moore and is directed by Joe Wright. She is read by WME, Bilstein Entertainment, attorneys Jason Sloan and Harris Hartman, and Narrative PR. All right. Well, I mean, look, man, this is just big news because who's left to get, you know, employed by Netflix from the big directors? Of course, you know, Steven Spielberg. But, I mean, we've had Alfonso Cuarón. We have Zack Snyder, Ron Howard.
Scorsese.
I mean, Netflix is getting all these big people. And now we have Amy Adams starring in a Netflix film?
Yeah.
Awesome, man.
Netflix is here to stay.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what this is going to be about and just seeing how well this does, because that sounds like a pretty damn good time watching, and just shows that you know, you other studios think you own these directors and they won't ever change over, but hell no, Netflix is here to stay. Yeah. All right, Brad. We're moving on to trailer talk. You keep sending me tweets, Brad. I'm not going to look at them because it distracts me from having to talk here. We have Cobra Kai Season 2. Because we're kind of moving over time, I want to say that this looks really good. I have not watched Season 1, and I want to, but your boy can't pay for more streaming services.
Yeah, there's so much shit to watch already, though.
Yeah. This looks really, really good. It has me really interested. I like that this has really been not like a reboot, but you know, it's taking on a very famous story from the Karate Kid and really doing it in the way where it's not completely negating the Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I give the trailer 2 thumbs up and I think that Season 2 looks great. I would love to see Season 1, but I just can't pay for anything more, my friend.
Yeah, I think they're doing it right.
Lights on, lights off. Indeed. All right. Well, that being said, we'll see you guys tomorrow we'll see you guys tomorrow when we talk about From Dusk Till Dawn and give you our next review in 90s Film Month. But as always, you can rate and review the podcast on your podcast app of choice. And you can also go follow us on Twitter at the Nerdcore _, Instagram at the Nerdcore, Facebook page the Nerdcore Pods. And as always, we hope you guys had a wonderful time. We had a wonderful time reading you the news, but expect a really good week this week. I mean, this is going to be crazy. We have From Dusk Till Dawn, we have Shazam, we have the Game of Thrones preview, and then an extra episode just for this week. We have the season premiere of Game of Thrones review. We're going to have the panel back for that. I mean, it's going to be a crazy week, Brad.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to the Game of Thrones. I think the first episode is just going to blow our minds.
Yeah. I mean,
I think more characters are going to die than we are thinking. That's my thought.
Yeah. All that conversation will be happening on Thursday when we record, and we'll be up for you guys on Saturday. And then literally right after the episode finishes on Sunday, we're going to hop on to record. We're probably going to have to record news early that day, but after that episode, we're going to record that review and we're going to put it up right after we're done recording. And look, this week is just going to be crazy, guys. I cannot hype this up as much, but thank you so much for listening. As always, be wonderful people and keep talking that nerd shit. Brad, send them into the podcast void.
All right, Ro. Thank you for being host as always. Thank you to all of our listeners out, all our Patreon supporters. We truly appreciate it. And I guess in the next episode, I get a lap dance from a vampire. Young Yoda out.